Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 135. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee, he is back home chilling in Las Vegas. I am in Sao Paulo, Brazil. Upgraded on the co-host front anyway here with Fernanda Praches, our favorite Brazilian reporter. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm happy to be back. I missed this.
I can see. I can tell the excitement in your voice right now. I can really hear it. It just runs through.
It's there. You can't. It's like the wind. You can't see it.
It is fight week in Brazil. We're both a little bit tired. Time change. Long day yesterday. All that good stuff. No time change for you. You have no excuse. You're younger than me.
I'm just old.
Jesus Christ.
I'm an old soul.
I turned 40 in March. I don't even want to talk about it. We will get into this fight card in just a second, but let me just get your overall thoughts on it because, you know, you and I were kind of looking at the card today, going through the odds. I mean, we've been, you know, working together. You've been the interviewer this week, and I've been the camera guy, so we've been kind of working in tandem. And so you and I have been talking about the fights and looking at the card. It's a damn fine card in terms of competition, but it doesn't feel like a big card. I mean, is that fair to say that from a Brazilian point of view, this isn't really getting necessarily – the hype and you know, the attention maybe that it should. I don't want to say that it should, but, there's not a Ronda Rousey. There's not an Anderson Silva. There's not a Vitor Belfort on the card.
Absolutely. I do feel that way. It's like you were saying, when we were looking at it, like, the matchups are so good. And you have names, like, of guys like Munhoz or Lineker or even Thiago Santos, who are guys that are, like, right on the cusp of, like, things really starting to happen for them, you know? Obviously, the focus is a lot on Lyoto and on Damian, who are the bigger names. But just like you said, going down the card and looking at just the potential there, it's immense. So I'm excited for it. I think we're going to have some really good fights. But I do understand why there wouldn't be that much excitement around it.
They like the big stars, right? I mean, there's no question about it. Yeah, it's I do think it's cliched, I think, to say, like, well, this is the card nobody's paying attention to, so I bet it's going to be fun.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? It's,
yeah.
And I think that's it does end up being true more often than not, but I think it's just when you have low expectations and then it's, you know, moderately fun, you go, well, damn, that was good. But literally, you look at this card, you're like, you go down the odds makers. I mean, there's not too many, you know, those huge disparities where it looks like it would be a massive upset. You got a lot of fights where it looks like they're kind of pick 'em fights. And then on top of that, as you said, they have real stakes involved in the fight as well. Guys that are kind of like right on the cusp of that next level. So I do think this is a card worth watching. I mean, if you're, you know, on the fence, record it, be ready, because I think there's going to be some good fights.
I totally agree with you.
All right, before we get too far into Brazil, I did want to mention one thing that I forgot to talk about last week in Poland. I was leaving Poland, and I barely made my flight. Like, I was literally, like, rushing. I was finishing up. I finally got back to doing an and a half card episode. It had been a couple months that I'd been able to do that, but I literally barely made my flight. First thing, and I actually just tweeted it out earlier because I forgot it was on my phone. The last thing I saw, and this was, like, 4 o'clock in the morning, was Mick Maynard tucked away with John Kavanaugh down a back hallway away from everybody. I mean, this was a bar full of people, you know, where everybody was hanging out. This was the host hotel, so you had all the fighters and their families and everybody having a beer. And then tucked away out of the side.
Oh, that's interesting.
Business going down. Kavanaugh had been holding court all night long. It's not like he was saying things. I mean, he wasn't necessarily talking to me as a reporter, but he was talking to a room full of fans.
Yeah.
He thinks that Conor absolutely smokes Tony Ferguson. He says he just thinks the matchup just favors Conor. No disrespect to Tony, but he just thinks the matchup favors Conor so much that he smokes him. It sounded like that wasn't even the fight that he's most interested in. And I think they want to do the Nate trilogy.
Yeah, that's the money fight. But I hate saying it, but
it's the money fight. But he thinks it's the more competitive fight. I don't know about that.
I mean, we've seen him beat Conor, so there's that.
Right. Yeah.
And the second one was very competitive. I mean, I wouldn't say very.
It was a competitive fight.
Yeah, it was a competitive fight. So I guess I can see where he's coming from in that there will be interest. Like, it's not Conor's just going to run over this guy. But, I mean, what do I know?
You want to see the Ferguson fight? I want to see the Ferguson fight.
No, of course I want to see the fight. He's earned it, man.
I agree.
Let the guy get his big paycheck.
I told John that, too. I said, listen, man. Listen, the Diaz fight's always going to be there. And
That's how I feel.
You could have – Conor could, God forbid, lose 3 fights in a row. And
that's still going to make sense.
Still put the fight on.
It's not a rankings fight or whatever. Like, this is the championship fight. So you do it now while they're 2 champions, you know. Like, to me, that's just – and just like you said, Nate's going to be there. I think, we don't know. He might be abducted by aliens. He might just decide he wants to live in the mountains and become a bear man. I don't even know, because we don't really know what to expect from that man.
That would be wild.
But that would be a good documentary.
Nate's living with the grizzlies now. It's amazing.
That would be a cool documentary, wouldn't it? But I hope it doesn't end
just,
like the
just
other
getting high and chilling with the bears.
Yeah, but that's one about the guy who, gets eaten by a bear.
Yeah, he, lived among the bears, but then he, ended up videotaping his own death, basically.
Okay, that turned real dark.
Yes. We don't want that. Nate, don't go with the bears. Don't go with
just
the bears.
Don't chill with bears, Nate. That's all we're asking.
Yeah, so I don't know. We'll see what ends up happening. Again, this was it was kind of a funny picture. I was glad to tweet it out today, and I think Kavanaugh actually retweeted it and was you put my boy in this car, you're going for a ride in this trolley, which I'm assuming is a little shopping cart that was there for some bizarre reason. But it was good. So anyway, I saw that. I thought that was kind of a fun scene.
That's awesome.
Hopefully Connor does return. I know there's been rumors maybe by the end of the year. That seems a little quick for me, but I mean, when he's ready to go, he's ready to go. But I definitely do want to see the Ferguson fight. They think on paper it's a great matchup for Connor. So if you think it's a great matchup,
just go with it.
I agree. And it doesn't – if you do that, it doesn't preclude the Diaz fight from happening. If you lose to
Tony. Even if you lose, exactly. And then everybody's happy.
The other thing I forgot to mention last week that I wanted to was getting a chance to actually talk to Adam Wieserak, who was the fighter, of course, who was scheduled to make his UFC debut. And because of the soccer fans, the ultras that showed up at the weigh-ins, and they were tied to him. They were fans of an opposing team. He is fans of an opposing team to Gdansk. And so it was certainly not his fault. It certainly, but he was indirectly tied to it. But man, it was so heartbreaking to talk to this guy on Friday night after the fight had been canceled, and really just such a stern reminder of these guys and girls and what they put themselves through and the type of athletes they are. Because, you know, he got pulled off the card, and the UFC, they paid him, you know, and I'm assuming full money. Nobody ever clarified that for sure, but, you know, he said he got paid. And I was like, bro, you got paid, and now you get to go fight in Australia, you know? Look on the bright side. But, literally, the guy is fighting back tears, and he's like, I don't care about that money. I've worked my life to get to this point. You know, I wanted to get in the UFC, and it was taken away from me through no fault of my own, you know, through nothing that I did.
That is so, can you imagine the emotion?
I can't. It was amazing.
It was the day before, because he made weight.
Literally, right? I mean, heavyweight, but I mean, you're as close as you can be at that point. I mean, yes, you have made weight. You've made the fight official.
Oh, God. And it's like, can you imagine? I can only imagine, and whenever I see these things, I, use real-life examples for me. When I hype myself up or stuff, or when I create expectations around even something silly, there's this really cool party that I'm I don't go up to parties because I just stay home a lot, but I just watch a lot of Netflix, hence my grizzly comment.
If you thought the new episode of the Kardashians was going to be really, really good.
Oh my God, true. Is Kylie pregnant? I don't know.
And you're really excited about
it. The expectations are through the roof. But yeah, and then just a feeling of really wanting something, or just being excited for something and then it falling through in a small scale. And then you're thinking about something as big as this, and the emotions are even that clear, right? Because you're dealing with nerves. I'm sure there are many moments in a fighter's camp when they think about giving up because they're too nervous.
Every one of them. Every last one of them. And whether they'll admit or not, it all goes through it.
Exactly. I'm sure there are moments when they think they're going to lose. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they have all of this. So you go through all of that to, you know, the day before, be like, okay, it's here, now let's do it. No. Can you imagine?
It was tough dealing with this. I mean, just dealing with his emotion, and obviously it was easy to talk to him, but just to see what he's going through, man, it was tough. So count me as a fan of the guy now, I guess. You know, he got rebooked in Sydney. That fight's going to happen in Sydney in November, so we'll actually be down there for that. So I'm sure we'll do a follow-up with him then.
Awesome.
And Anthony Hamilton, too. It's kind of weird. He had his fight taken away. Obviously, I doubt he cares. He's like, you know, he knew he was fighting for his job. Hell, he had mentioned retiring after his last fight.
He suggested, got paid.
And he got paid. So I'm sure he's just like, peace. Cool, man. And we get another paycheck in a month. Maybe he was heartbroken too. I don't know. We'll find out. But I don't know. I meant to mention that because it seems I always like those little stories of, I don't know, when you really see the human side of these guys, you forget sometimes, you know, that they're just these athletes and they're these fighters and these badasses, and you forget the human side of it. And that was just a real strong reminder to me. And now I'll be cheering for the guy. So we'll definitely talk to him when he gets down to Australia. His English is pretty good. He's like, I'm sorry, my English isn't that great. You know, I'm like, well, it's better than my Polish, I can assure you that. And I thought it was fine. He was just a little self-conscious. Yeah. But anyway, I got to cheer for him. So, all right, Derek Brunson versus Lyoto Machida. It was wild, man. You know, we got to sit down And, of course, yesterday you sat down and had a nice interview with Lyoto. And today we got to see him at the face-offs, and then he did that yell at the end of it and just freaked everybody out.
Nobody was expecting that from Lyoto.
No.
Like, that's not the guy you expect to, like, make sudden movements.
I used the headline that Lyoto Machida scares the shit out of everybody. And I saw some people online that were like, ah, come on, what is that? But I guess maybe the video doesn't convey properly that we're in this little tiny room, and we're all kind of right there in front of him. And, you know, as you said, Lyoto, the very reserved, quiet, you know, and hell, if anything, you know, we thought Colby and Maia might have a little bit of a, not that Damian's going
to
beef.
Colby was going to try to do something.
Right,
I thought he was going to stir his shit up.
I can't believe it. Colby actually shook his hand. Kind of wild.
Did he? No, he didn't.
No, to start, but not to walk
off
the stage.
Oh, yeah, because I remember Damian, like, reached out and then Colby had left.
It was probably one of those things that Colby, like, didn't think about. Just habit. You shake your opponent's hand and you're like, fuck.
God fucking damn it.
But no, so we were
played yourself again, Colby.
That's what we were expecting. Instead, it's Machida letting out this, like, you know, yell, and I think everybody did kind of like jump back a little bit. It was kind of funny. But okay, being around Lyoto, to me, it's been so long since we've been around him. Of course, he had the suspension, the USADA suspension, which everybody I think was a little iffy about. I was surprised that he didn't fight it. Yeah, except for
Brunson,
Derek Brunson.
This time he didn't, but he hinted the last time that he didn't really buy the whole innocence thing.
He did. But being around Lyoto again, I don't know, it was weird. I mean, starstruck isn't the right word, because I cover this thing on a daily basis, and I talk to these fighters every single day. But I don't, it was just kind of like when he walked into the room, and I'm like, God damn, Lyoto Machida. You know, the way he carries himself, the way he handles himself.
He's a star.
I don't know. I could really feel it.
He's a star. And what I felt differently was the last fights, I think because he was doing it so much, like, I did feel, and this is, I don't like saying I feel this or that, because, you know, obviously we never know what's going on in their heads, but I did see it in interviews and stuff like that, that he didn't seem fully invested anymore, you know? And Lyoto has always been very passionate about his craft and everything. And what I'd been seeing, even in, like, personal interactions, was just him, you know, not looking excited anymore.
Think burned out?
I think so.
I kind of agree with you. And I think we're seeing it come back. You know, I mean, he had some losses.
That's what I felt.
It feels like the time away is good. You feel bad saying, you know, hey, maybe the suspension was good for him. You know what I mean? But, it does seem like he's re-energized. And this fight, it's a weird fight when
and
they first announced it.
Missing something is good.
That's true.
You know, that's it. That it makes the heart grow fonder or whatever. Mm-hmm. Isn't that what people say? It is. I think that has a lot to do with it. Like, you don't miss it until you've not. And this is the specific case where it's, like, totally out of his hands, you know. So you can only imagine how much he missed it. And so I think he's probably, like, in that honeymoon stage of falling in love with it again.
When they announced this fight, I'll be honest, it was kind of a head-scratcher to me, I guess. I didn't really get it. You know, I don't know. But now that we're here, I kind of like it. I'm kind of torn, to be honest with you, because I feel like, stylistically, Lyoto is exactly the type of person to beat Derek Brunson, right? Like, take his aggression, use it against him.
Yeah.
You know,
Derek yesterday.
You can't. I mean, the Whitaker fight. I mean, that's the perfect example, right? Yeah. Of like,
he says that's what he fixed. Mm-hmm. But we're gonna.
But
have
that's
to see
that's what we're gonna see. But, you know, then you have the question marks of, you know, Lyoto after this much time away, can he still be sharp?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Can he? Is the timing, because everything is timing-based, distance-based, reach-based. I mean, that's his style. Can that be crisp when you haven't been going full speed in you know, 2 years because of what's been going on? So I'm kind of intrigued by this, and I'm struggling to pick because I feel like even with the losses that Lyoto's had, I feel like if this was a Lyoto that was continually fighting, unless we had just seen some sharp decline, that he's set up perfectly to beat Derek Brunson. But the question marks to me are all around Lyoto. He's the one that's going to – I mean, we're going to find out. I mean, I'm not going to be shocked, but if I'm looking for issues, the question marks to me are around Lyoto Machida.
Oh, of course. And I think that we got that when we asked the fighters, you know, for their predictions, and all of them were a bit torn because that's it. Like, in cases like these, it really rides on the fighter we're going to have back.
Mm-hmm.
And we have no way of knowing.
To guess.
You know, neither Lyoto or Derek believe that ring rust is going to be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's like you said, his movement is very like, it's very much about knowing where his opponent is going to be at a given time.
Right.
Right. And how do you lose that by not being in the cage with them? He's been training. He's always been athletic. So I'm not that worried about it.
Been at Kings MMA, right? Which that's a good thing, right?
Yeah.
Rafael Cordero, great striking coach.
Yeah, and his whole life, you know, like, this is not the kind of guy that's going to be out of shape ever.
Right, he's a martial artist
and his
to his style, core.
Yeah, exactly. And his style, it's not – it preserved him a lot.
There hasn't been a lot of wars.
So he can – those are the things that make me feel like maybe, yeah, maybe we're – at 39, we're going to get a good Lyoto. But at the same time, like you said – there are these like tiny little things that make it really hard to assess. I think I actually picked Brunson, but I don't even remember because I was just so like whatever,
right.
Like such a coin toss for me that it was hard to pick. I just, and with Derek too, the one question mark is, as we were saying, like he says that the key to him has been taming that aggression,
right.
You know, knowing how to channel it, but and to use that in his favor instead of, like, opening himself up like an idiot, which he did with Whittaker. But at the same time, that's instinct.
Yeah.
So what if he can never really shake off that instinct? What if that's something that's, you know, it's going to come out regardless of what he does in training because we have no idea of the adrenaline rush that happens in there. So it's a really tough one to call. And I'm very intrigued and I won't be surprised with pretty – unless, like, Brunson – pulls off a submission. I don't think that would surprise me. No. I don't think I'd be surprised with anything.
It's intense. All right. Well, you had a chance to sit down and talk to Lyoto Machida, whose English, by the way, has gotten much better. Really
so good.
I will say, and people listen to me and see if I'm right, there were moments in here, because I'm not in the interview the way you are. Since you were the one doing the interview, it's different when you're behind the camera and you're listening to audio levels, you watch everything. But there were moments where I could close my eyes and he sounded like Vitor Belfort. There was something in his...
Somebody commented that too.
Did they really?
Yeah.
There was something in there, like just the tone or the cadence. I was like, whoa, that's bizarre. And then he would come back a little bit and you're like, no, that's definitely Lyoto Machida. There's a little bit, I don't know if they...
The professor old Tony.
I guess that's what it is.
They both talk to us like they're giving us grand life lessons.
Right. That is
like,
true.
That's the thing. They will not just have a conversation
That
with
is true.
You. They will teach you things. But, you know, the way that Lyoto does it is a lot...
No, there was no dogs around to hang out. No service animals.
No gimmicks, nothing. But other than that, just the way he carries himself is a lot more... he exchanges more, mm-hmm. right? Vitor is like, when you interview him, it's a lot more one-sided. Whatever you ask, you're going to get what he wants to give
right.
you. With Lyoto, he's a very thoughtful guy. You can see he pays attention to what he's being asked. He's very measured.
Yep.
But he's sharing knowledge.
Definitely.
He's like teaching his shit.
Definitely.
It's amazing.
All right, so here, let's hear your interview with headliner Lyoto Machida.
I guess the main narrative around this fight week has been your comeback, right? It's been a while since we've seen you, and you've done that for a long time. So a lot of it is focused on the inactivity, right? How is he going to look after being away for a long time? But you've been talking about the good sides of this time you took away. So just tell me a little bit more about that. Like, what were you able to learn and perfect while you couldn't return to the octagon?
So most of the things that I've been learning throughout this year, these months that I'll be out, that I'm out, so was outside of the octagon. Because our life is a fight. You know, you have to face so many problems in your life. And when something happens in your life, sometimes you don't know how to act, how to do. And it's difficult. That's what happened with me as soon as the episode happened in my life about the doping. So at the beginning I was very stressed, I was very emotionally affected. Then a couple of months later I could move on everything, but it was difficult because I had to accept everything. When you don't accept everything, you're gonna struggle over and over again. So it's important to accept. The moment that I didn't accept that, I was in the same spot. I just tried to move my life and I couldn't move my life because the energy just stopped, and everything stopped in my life. So at the moment that I change everything, so things start changing, and I start learning different things, different abilities, that different potential that I had, that I have, I could express everything. You know, I could, like, I learned how to cook. I stay with my family. I stay with my parents, and I could travel more. I could enjoy life. And sometimes, when you are in fight in camp, you don't have this time. So, I used to think in a positive way. So I put everything. He said, "No, this is gonna help me. Somehow, this is gonna help me." And at the end of the day, it was beneficial to me because I could be a better person. I could be a better human being. That's the life. And because everybody one day gonna retire, and that's episode showed me that life has more. Life goes beyond the octagon, beyond to be an athlete.
Did it ever occur to you in this time to not come back?
At the beginning, I was overwhelmed, and I think maybe it's gonna be hard to come back because I'm 37. I was 37 at the moment. Said maybe it's gonna be hard to come back, and suddenly I think, hey, I'm martial artist, so I like to train. That's what I like to do. So I don't care if I have a competition or if I don't have a competition. I'm gonna just keep training. Because I like to be in this environment. I like to be surrounded people that give me some technique, learning, and teach something too. So I just kept my training every day. And when I realized everything was done.
Did you watch fights? Did you keep up with what was happening in the division? Was it painful at first even to just really watch and see other people there? How was that, your relationship with watching and experiencing MMA?
Yes, that's what I told you. At the beginning, I was overwhelmed and I was comparing myself with other guys. Mm-hmm. When you compare yourself with other guys, you're gonna suffer.
Yeah.
You're gonna suffer because you're gonna find someone pretty, someone handsome, someone rich, someone strong than you. So your life is your unique life. That's what you have to put in your mind. That's what I put in my mind. So my life is my life. I don't care about the life, the other lives. I just want to think about what I have to do to improve as a person, as a fighter, what I have to do to enjoy my life. Then when I put that mindset, everything changed in my life.
And how does it feel like? Fight week, the interviews, even the weight cut. How has that felt?
So I was missing that moment. I was missing every single moment in the fight week. So for me, it's an amazing moment. It's a priceless to be here. I'm very grateful to be here again. And what I can say is I'm more mature now. I have more experience, you know. Everything just gives me more power.
And you're fighting Derek Brunson, who is a guy who is dangerous, and we've seen it. He was on a bit of a streak, and you know, when he lost, it was kind of a controversial loss, back to winning. But he's not that big of a name, right? When they offered you this fight, how was the process of accepting it? Were you like on board right away? Did you like it that it was like challenging your opponent for your return?
So my life is all about challenge. So I like to challenge myself. I like to pursue a dream. So I have to have a reason to do something. I don't want to do something just to do something. So when I decide to come back, I said to my manager, no, I would like to have a challenge. I would like to have something that push me so hard in training, in mentally, physically. And that's what happened. They choose Derek Brunson. I accepted right away. I said, no problem. I want this. I know he's strong, but everybody's strong. When you put that in your mind, everybody's tough. That's the mindset that you have to have. So I don't want to, underestimate anybody. So I wanna keep my mind that he's the strongest guy that I'm going to face. That's the mindset that I always had in my mind.
So speaking a little bit more about Brunson, Break him down for me a little bit. I think we talk about his wrestling and his power, really. It's the main things that pop up when you look at his fights. How did you prepare for that, and how do you feel like you match up against him?
So I had a very good camp. So I had very good partners in King's MMA, at Grace Academy, and my academy, Machida Academy too. So I'm very well prepared. To be honest, in this moment, I don't think about any positive thing about Derrick Brunson. I know he's tough, but I don't care about that. I'm already prepared. I just think what I have to do. And I believe that's going to be a good matchup for me, because he's an explosive fighter. He likes to attack, and I'm a counterattack fighter. So I'm more about speed, distance, and precision. And that's what I'm going to try to catch.
And your division is already kind of weird as it is, because the champion is fighting someone else and nobody really knows what's going to happen. You're coming off a long way off and losses, but at the same time, you were a former champion. Your losses were against high caliber opponents. How do you assess, say you win on Saturday, how do you assess your place in the division, or do you even assess it at all? Like, where does a win get me here?
So, first of all, what is past is past. What is done is done. For me, doesn't matter what happened in the past. The only thing that I can carry with me is my experience. And today I can say that as soon as I pass this fight, I'll be in the middle of the division again. And in any moment, I can fight for the title. I'll be in the area. If somebody took me down, I'll be ready to kick this ball.
And is that something that you still like really want? That obviously, you know, that's the end goal, but getting that title now in this division is something that really is that fire still like really in your heart?
Hey, this is not a will. This is a burn desire. This is a burn desire. That's the reason that I come back. I don't have any reason. The reason that I come back is I like to challenge myself. I like to pursue my dream. That's what I want to do.
And you are coming back in a main event in Brazil. A lot of expectation around it. It's a well matched up card, but you're by far the biggest name on. You and Damon are really the bigger names. How do you balance that? Is there a level of pressure that comes with it? And how do you balance that with the other side of things, the motivation?
So yeah, that's what you told me, like you have both sides. So you have to balance things. I have to take advantage of the good things, and I have to control the pressure. Pressure sometimes is important to have a fear, sometimes it's important too, but you know how to control everything is the most important thing. So I always try to balance and use the crowd, use the country in favor of me, and use the pressure. Like, use the pressure in favor of me too. So I put everything in my mind that I have to give my best and take all the pressure out.
And lastly, you said it yourself that your time off served you to show that there is a life out there. And you have other things, you have your businesses, you have karate, you have your family. But at the same time, you have a goal inside the octagon, which is to get that belt again. Having said all of this, does retirement from MMA cross your mind? Do you have a timeline, even if it's 5 years from now, 10 years from now, or is it something that you're taking in one year?
Of course. But while I can train good, while I feel the good energy, going to the academy every day, wake up and prepare everything the day before the training, while I have that, there is no reason to stop. There is no reason now to interrupt my career. So, of course, one day I'm going to retire as everyone, but I think I still have a couple of fights that I can put my performance, I can do an outstanding performance.
And, okay, now that's the one. You've fought so many people and you've done so much already. Is there anything, apart from the title fight, of course, that you feel like a person or a fight that you feel like you want to do yet, something more of an immediate goal? Maybe a matchup that eluded you, a fighter that you want to fight for whatever reason, like one specific thing that you weren't able to do so far that you want to get done.
Oh, To be honest, my path today to the belt is a straight line. I don't think anything about on my side, anything about the fight that I have to do. It's gonna be a straight line in my mind. So whoever UFC put in front of me, I'll be able to fight, I'll be able to do a great fight and continue my path to the victory, continue my path to the title.
Welcome back to the May Road Show. That was Lyoto Machida sitting down with our own Fernanda Praches, who is here with me right now. Help me understand, Fernanda, in Brazil, what Lyoto's star power is. I mean, we know Anderson and Vitor; those are the two stars, right? But this is a former champion. He's not. I mean, I don't say he's not marketable because he, in a lot of ways, he's very respectful. He is what you want in a martial arts. But I guess what I mean is, you know, he's definitely, I guess he's the anti Conor McGregor. You know what I mean? It's not the brash, you know, big brand. But I mean, is he a star here?
Yeah, I mean, he's been away for a long time.
Right.
A lot of shit happens in 2 years, so it's like, there's that factor, and his name has kind of like faded a little bit because of that, and there's no denying that. And then his losses, I think, kind of, you know, took away from his mystique more than Vitor's, I guess, did or something, you know, in terms of just fame. And Vitor has always been a guy to chase fame, you know, in a sense that he makes the most out of opportunities. He really relishes his brand. Like, he's that type of guy. Lyoto isn't. But at first, Lyoto was like in Rolling Stone when MMA wasn't a thing. Like, he has this style going for him, which is
very unique.
Right now, it's not anymore. But I guess when he first came up, it was super intriguing.
That's a good point.
And Lyoto was actually the first guy that I was really interested in MMA. Like, I was such a big Lyoto fan before I worked in this. Oh my God. Like, he was, like, all over my social media. Like, I was obsessed with Lyoto. I thought he was the coolest guy ever. And, you know, as I got to know him, like, I noticed he's actually a really nice person.
Really nice, yeah.
Really nice guy.
It's genuine.
Indeed. But it's just funny. So that's – I do think that he has that kind of, like, he has the charisma. And like you said, when he walks into a room, he commands attention.
Yeah, he does.
That's not something you teach. That's something you have. He always had it. So he is a star. He was a really big star. He's not that big of a star anymore. And MMA changed a lot, like, in itself.
Right.
Since he was the champion. So – there are all those little things, but he for sure is, like, up there with the biggest.
Well, this would be big for him. This would be a great way for him to turn. He says he's fresh as ever, and as you said, I mean, he's one of those guys that could fight for a while, so we'll see. Okay, so we should say, as we sit down and record this on Thursday night, the way we always do at the Roadshow, there is a seminar going on, USADA-led seminar for the Brazilian athletes. And it's not just the Brazilian athletes on this card. There's Brazilians, fighters that have been flown in from all over Brazil and some that train in the States that are here as well. And so it's a Portuguese language presentation, seminar, Q&A. We weren't given a – people talked about it, but it wasn't open to the media. It was just for fighters. And I can understand why.
Yeah,
you
totally
want fighters to be
comfortable
to say whatever they want and not have us in there. But I did want to take this opportunity to kind of talk to you. I reached out to you last week because of some information I heard while I was on the ground in Poland and talking to some people that I was unaware of. And that, you know, it's – I think in MMA circles, you know, Brazilians have been – whether it's fair or unfair, I mean, there have been a lot of people, fingers pointed to say, look how many Brazilians, you know, test positive. Look how many is, you know, they've got to be on the stuff or whatever. But lately there's been a couple of positives that, as far as I can tell, the people at the UFC and maybe even the people at USADA aren't exactly comfortable with. The Junior Dos Santos one, that was one that stood out. I mean, we know where JDS's position is on performance enhancers, and so I think that was shocking. And then Little Nog to come out and you're like, come on, Little Nog, like, wait, what's going on? But what was shared to me that I didn't necessarily understand, and I wanted you to kind of get some insight on it, is that supplements here, not that they're regulated strictly in the United States, because that's one of the issues with supplements, is that they don't have the regulation they probably should, but supplements here, you can basically walk into a pharmacy and they're like, mixed for you or made for you right there in the pharmacy. Is it, am I saying that correctly?
We have this thing that we call them manipulation pharmacies, in which you basically get a subscription that is custom made for you.
Right.
Endocrinologists do it. Like, I've taken those prescriptions for, like, losing weight and shit like that. Nothing illegal
right.
or weird. Just, like, it's something that it's parts this and this and this. Expensive as fuck, by the way. So you got all those little – you have that. Like, this is a concept and it's normal and a lot of people do it. But I think what you're getting at is that some people, like, put – steroids
well, just,
like that inside it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, you talk about the, because, you know, you hear these horror stories, more or less, about, like, you know, these big companies that, you know,
yeah.
the where the drugs are manufactured.
Yeah.
You know, yes, you know, the recipe for this particular substance shouldn't have anything, but it's manufactured in the same plant as something that's, you know, where something illegal is made, and
yeah.
so they get cross contaminated and that sort of thing. It just seems to me that. If we don't even have regulatory control over, like, what's being made in, like, vast quantities in these industries, then I would think a mom-and-pop shop, for lack of a better term, you know, there would be even more of an issue of potential tainting, you know, cross-contamination. Hell, even somebody just making something that they're like, well, we'll tell you it's not illegal, but we know if we throw this illegal stuff in there, it'll work really good, and you'll want to keep coming back and get it. Because it's kind of like it's a proprietary mix, right?
Yeah, it's hard. I don't even, like, want to say too much about it because I feel like it requires investigating and
right.
knowing. Like, I'd heard that people do, like, put, like, make, like, steroids in those things.
Right.
Like, that some people get a prescription for, like, steroids and
right.
shit. You know, I've heard that, but I don't know it for a fact.
Yeah.
But you're right in that it makes the control harder than a giant supplement company, for sure.
I would
sure.
think so. So I wasn't aware of that. So again, I'm not trying to just let people off the hook and USADA is going to do their thing. And I've always said, look, I'm not an expert
yeah,
on this stuff.
But
your
reasoning makes sense.
It stuck out to me.
It could happen, for sure. That it would be harder to kind of like... It would be easier for it to happen in a setting like this than in a major company. I totally agree with you.
I would think so. So it sounds like there may be some news coming from Little Nog and Junior Dos Santos. But I don't know. I thought that was cool that USADA and the UFC were putting that on for the Brazilian athletes, paying for the fighters to be here. Obviously, I believe it's at the UFC's cost. I don't think these people had to pay out of pocket to come attend.
I would imagine that they haven't.
Yeah. So pretty cool. All right. Co-main event, Damian Maia versus Colby Covington. The fun fight, I guess. I mean, Colby Covington said, like, this is the main event. You know, this is the one. We're the ones out here selling the fight. And that's, I mean, that is what Colby does. He sells the fight. Damian doing things the exact opposite. But I just want to talk about this fight because, A, it's a big, big fight. I mean, serious, real title implications for both guys. Damian, and we'll talk about, we'll listen to your interview in just a moment. But Damian very openly said, listen, I know this isn't a number one contender fight for me.
Yeah.
But, you know, beating Colby Covington keeps him in the discussion. Meanwhile, Colby, you know, thinks that he deserves a shot at Tyron Woodley with this. Probably not going to, as you pointed out. You know, it's a number one contender fight has already been named. But, you know, he picks up this win. It's a significant win.
Yeah.
So, big win, or big fight in terms of implications. But also, stylistically, I love this fight, man. I really do, because neither guy are necessarily fantastic strikers. I mean, Colby's definitely getting better. But, but Colby's bread and butter is his wrestling and grappling. Damian's grappling is otherworldly, but Colby has this really unique ability that I see that he gets out of bad positions so quickly and so easily. It's just always impressed me. You know, you see him in a fight, and you're like, Jesus Christ, look where he is, and he's out. You know, so I like this, not only what the implications, but stylistically, I love this fight.
I do fear, that's the thing, I do like it, but I'm scared that it might bore us to tears. Because we might... I wouldn't put it past either of them just stifling the other just enough. And because they're both so good, they can't – neither of them can allow for mistakes to happen on
true.
The ground.
True.
You know, so it's like Damian – I don't find Damian conservative as a lot of people think.
Right.
I think he looks for the attack a lot.
Right.
He always does. He goes toward the back. He looks for it, but some people just won't give it to him, you know? And that's fine. It's pretty high-level guys. Like, you saw him, like, handle Gunnar Nelson the way that he did.
True.
Gunnar Nelson is not an idiot. Like, he's not just going to stay there and just let himself get finished.
So, strong opinions there.
So it's a lot. It's a lot. Strong opinions, like Gunnar's emotions.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's not like he's going to just let him do whatever he wants. So that's all this to say. I don't think Maia is... I think he is an aggressive fighter in his own little special way. But then it's like he's fighting a guy who's not going to make it easy for him on the ground. And Colby, like, with everything that he says and yada yada, like, oh, he's a one-trick pony, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. He's not stupid either.
No.
Like, he knows exactly what Maya's good at. And he knows that he cannot leave a single opening because that's when you get finished.
That's true.
So I do fear that there is a chance that we're going to see two guys not relinquishing control, like, or a super defensive one and the other not being able to find any openings.
Well,
so
you've kind of ruined it all for me now.
I guess it's a gift. I'm the Grinch. I'm the Grinch that stole MMA. I'm so sorry.
Well, here's the bright side, I guess. It's a 3-round fight, not a 5-round fight. So if it does turn that way, at least we only have to deal with 15 minutes of it, not 25.
Yeah.
But it's funny because what you were describing to me in my head immediately made me think of Damian Maia versus Jake Shields. And I do remember going into that thinking, this is going to be the sickest jiu-jitsu fight ever.
And it wasn't.
And I pulled it up. And interestingly enough, can you believe, first of all, that was October of 2013. So we're in the same month,
four years
ago. And do you remember where that fight was?
Sao Paulo,
Brazil.
Oh, I thought it was Rio.
Sao Paulo
is
a different venue. I can't even remember this one. Jose Correa Gymnasium.
Oh, yeah.
Barueri. That sounds like a different part of Sao. That's a
Barueri
different city.
It's Sao Paulo, the state.
Right, but not the.
It's, but yeah.
Okay, I just looked at. I was looking at Sherdog with the record there, and it was. I saw Sao Paulo, and I was like, oh shit, here we go. So, not just the state of Sao Paulo, not the city of Sao Paulo.
Yeah.
So hopefully, we won't have a bad mojo there. But yeah, you know what? You're definitely right. I mean, there is a possibility that I hope you're wrong. But
you're dealing with both guys who are not afraid to be boring and win.
And win.
That's like the gist of it.
Damian Maia, you got a chance to interview him. I think I saw you tweet something that, you know, like you just always love talking to him. You can't,
I love it.
What is it about Damian? Because, I mean, I think at this point, probably most MMA fans are well aware that he's a pretty classy dude. But, I mean, what is it about him that you enjoy talking to so much?
A lot of people probably hate talking to him because he's not going to – like, he's the opposite of Colby in that too. Because
true.
Colby's going to feed you one-liners.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have your headline immediately. You're going to have, you know, the one that – it's a very easily digestible interview.
Right.
With Maia, I get sincere answers.
Mm.
And that is so rare. I mean – he is very diplomatic. Sometimes I just kind of know what's going on and I know he won't say it
right
in those words.
Right.
But he's thoughtful. When you ask a question...
He got kind of dicked over by the UFC for a while, right?
Yeah.
But he never
He's
he
not
going to
go and be like, oh yeah, they fucked me over. He's
right.
Never going to say it. I'm
they
sorry, guys.
To give...
I tried to not swear so much. I'd been doing a good job, but I'm right back on being like the... Foulest.
Well, when
ever.
You're standing up for Damian Maia, but I mean, they waited forever to give him his title shot. Then they didn't even give him like a full camp.
Oh, they were awful to him, and then he shows up at the press conference.
Yeah,
wearing like sunglasses after a fight that everybody hated.
Yep.
And then he goes and says, you know, and it's classy the way that he could have said, there is no way I'm going up there and talking to these guys. Like,
that's right.
And getting, like, massacred online and things like that after having to struggle so much together. So it's like, yeah, he's not going to go out and say, they dicked me over, but they did.
Are you surprised he's fighting again already? I mean, he it was funny, before his interview, and I don't think he necessarily mentioned it during the interview with you, but... before or after? He said, he's like, hey, has anybody fought more than me in the last 6 months?
Yes, before.
Yeah, he's like, this is my third fight in 6 months. Like, has anybody fought more? And we were like, well, maybe Sam Alvin. We figured out, that was 7 months, so
yeah.
you're still the winner. Plus, the last one doesn't really count as a fight anyway. So,
not too bad for, like we were saying, not bad for an old man.
That's right. So, I don't know. Are you surprised that he's fighting again so soon?
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. The minute, I think, like, I'm good friends with his manager. So, I mean, I remember texting him after the fight, like, please make this man go on vacation.
Mm.
That's all I said. Like, I really thought that he was going to take, like, a long layoff and just, like, chill. And then There you have it.
Does that worry you a little bit here?
It worries me. Hmm. It worries me. I mean, at least it was double the time he got for Woodley.
Right.
He got to go to the U.S. and you know, sharpen his wrestling, which is something that he really likes doing, and he couldn't do with Woodley. So you have those factors, and again, he's a guy who's always at the gym, so it's
a martial artist, martial artist, not out partying.
Doesn't get hurt.
Yep.
Doesn't get injured. So you have all those things, and I get his reasoning that he gave us. First of all, he wanted to fight in São Paulo, and second of all, he's got a limited amount of years. So
get it in while you can.
It all of it makes sense, but it does worry me. It does worry me because there's only, like, you know, there's only so much a human body can do, and just do that again, and he's gonna be dieting again, and then staying on weight again, and then making the weight cut again. You know, that to me is a factor.
All right. Well, we heard from one classy Brazilian earlier with Lyoto Machida. I mean, you're a classy Brazilian as well, but
yeah, classy as fuck.
Let's hear from another classy Brazilian, Damian Maia.
An interesting opponent, because he's one of those guys who really, you know, gets his skates off, you know, talking big and talking about you and creating that kind of animosity. I think you've been at this for so long, but this is not something that seems to affect you that much. But are you, like, following any of it? Do you catch wind of it? Do you even find it, like, kind of amusing to an extent?
Yeah, I really don't follow that, you know, especially when it's getting near to the fight, because my approach of the fight is never like being like that. So for me, it's kind of doesn't matter. And my experience says, you know, don't worry about that, and don't follow and don't feed that. And for me, fight's more like a strategy. It's not emotion. And I know he's probably doing that because for him, fight is emotional. It's more emotional, and he needs to, you know, put this burning on his soul. But you know, for me, it works different, and that's the way that I am.
And so talking a little bit about him as an opponent, I think it's a matchup that a lot of people are saying is kind of unfavorable to you because of his wrestling game and how he's looked recently. How do you assess him? Like, when they offered you him as an opponent, what did you see that you thought, well, this is how I can beat him? Like, how have you prepared for him?
Yeah, the main thing for me to accept this fight is that the fight was in São Paulo, and I really want to fight here in my hometown. But, you know, I've been just in the UFC 10 years. The last October 20th was, you know, was 10 years. My first fight was in 2007, October 20th, UFC 77. And so many times I heard this is not a good matchup for you, and so many times I won that, you know, I really don't care about that.
But how do you break him down and, like, a little bit for me, how do you feel like your game matches up mm-hmm. against his?
I think he's a great wrestler, for sure. That's for sure. You know, he has a lot of credentials, and he adapt well his wrestling for MMA. He's doing well. He's proving that, you know, and he deserved this fight for sure. But you know, I think my gameplay is very bad for anyone in the weight class. And I think what he's doing now, I've been doing for a longer time.
You did mention in your last fight that one big part of your camp is traveling to the U.S. to mm-hmm. train wrestling there. Mm-hmm. Were you able to get that, to do that this time?
Yeah, this time I did. I had more time to prepare. The Woodley fight, I had just 1 month, so it was impossible to do that. But the last 9 camps, including Woodley fight, and this fight, you know, I was able to, in 8 of those fights, I was able to go to New Jersey and train with the guys at Edge Hoboken.
You did say that you really wanted to fight here. But I think people were a bit surprised about your quick turnaround, because you've been fighting a lot, and mm-hmm. then you took that fight with Woodley on short notice, and then, wow, he's at it again. Did you take a second to think about it? Was that ever a concern, like, wow, maybe this is too fast?
You know, I'm 39 now, 39 years old, and I'm feeling the best shape of my life. Technically and in terms of conditioning. So I need to use this time that I still have. I don't know how long I will, you know, be in such a good, you know, performance. How long I will be able to hold this performance. So, you know, I want to keep fighting and enjoy these last, you know, years or last fights of my life.
Do you already have, you know, you say you don't know how long you already, and you have other things, right, outside of fighting. That's the thing, you already have other, you have your gym, you have your family. Do you have it in your mind, like, sort of, some people set plans, like, 5 years from now, or are you just not, as long as I can keep training?
No, of course I have plans, but they are not, I don't let them play a big role in my mind now, because of course my focus is to fight. But you know, I'm step by step, I started transitioning. I'm trying to build better my affiliate schools in Brazil and outside Brazil, and also the seminars that I always been doing, but you know, I want to keep doing. And I did some things for the TV, and maybe something that I can do in the future. And we have a new project, but it's a secret now, with TV and with the UFC. So there's many things going on. And the most important is, like, I keep the focus on fighting, but I need, you know, slowly do the transition. And I think that's the time.
And we were just talking about how active you've been in the past few months, and you just said it yourself, you're 39, when you have much younger fighters who aren't able to do quick turnarounds, who are consistently getting injured. I mean, do you think it's training, just the way you fight? How are you able to, like, stay in one piece for so long?
Yeah, this is a very tough sport, and, you know, the training is very tough, but I think it's all together. I think it's my body, you know, that is a little bit different, and I think training is much more intelligent now, and since Eduardo has been my head coach, we've been improving a lot the way that we training, so smarter and smarter every camp, and that's is helping. And lucky also to don't get injury all the time. And I think, you know, eating better than I used to do, you know, like in terms of nutrition, you know, think more about my health, not just about fighting, not just about cutting weight for the fight and then come back really heavy, but, you know, be constant in everything that I do, be constant in training, in nutrition, in mindset. I think if you keep consistent, that's what will happen. That will help you in the long term, and I think that's what is happening now.
You're coming off a loss, a major loss, you'd say, that also snapped a big streak, right? Mm-hmm. Right after the fight, you went to the press conference and you talked to everyone, and you were, like, super classy about it. And talked uh-huh. to you didn't seem broken or deterred at uh-huh. any point. But at the same time, I mean, it must have been kind of an impact
of
for
course,
you.
Yeah.
How was it just emotionally dealing with that loss and just, like, reshaping your head and getting back in the game? Like, how did you deal with that?
Yeah, a loss is always really tough. But one thing that I have peace of mind is that in that 1 month that they gave to you to prepare, we did our best that we ever did. So we made some changes that really worked. We made everything to be at our best. And I did my best in that day. So, like I said, consistency, not just with the nutrition side or training side, but also with the mindset. And before I would think, like many years ago, like, oh, that's bad, it's a shit thing, you know, I just lost a title fight. But now I learn how to value things that I did, even if didn't come, the outcome was not what I want, of course. You know, there's no reason to be all broke because I did my best, I came there, and it's just, you know, lift your head and keep going and fight again and try to go again to the same spot.
How long did it take you to get back to the gym, for instance?
after that. I think always like around 2 weeks, you know, 2 weeks resting, and then I come back lifting some weights, do some easy training.
And we all know, like, it was a really a kind of a hard road for you to get there, and a frustrating one that at some point had you thinking, I'm not even gonna fuss too much about title shots because you don't want to get like disappointed.
Exactly.
Now that it's done, you've had it, but you, I would assume that you want to have that shot again.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, of course. That's why I keep fighting, you know. I say nowadays I fight not just to get the belt, you know. I think I have a mission much bigger than that. And I said that before, like, which is spread one martial art, you know, spread Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and try to bring to the biggest number of people that I can, because, you know, I saw so many lives changing with, you know, when they go to the academy training and all around the world. So for me, that's the nicest thing. That's the main goal. And the other thing that brings me a lot of joy is to go to the academy and training every day. So I love to train, I love to learn. I just addict to learn. I want to learn everything. Now, you know, I just put Duolingo in my iPhone and I'm learning some French because I said, okay, I want to learn one more language, and I want to learn music, you know, I'm learning some guitar. I'm just addicted to learn. That's something that brings me a lot of happiness. It's the same with MMA and Jiu-Jitsu. So mission and joy together is bigger than just, you know, be a champion. But be a champion for sure is the reason, is one of the main reasons, not the only one, but one of the main reasons that I keep fighting. So, but it's not the only reason.
A little bit along those lines. I think Kobe has made it pretty clear that if he wins, like, he thinks he needs Tyron and whatever. Do you even think about what beating him here means? You know, what you can ask for, what you can want? Are you even thinking about it at this point?
No, not right now. Maybe Saturday after the fight I will think about that, but right now I want to clean my mind, you know, as much as possible. And of course Kobe is saying that because, you know, it's the way that he should do, you know. He want to be a champion like I do, and it's fair that he asked for that. There's nothing wrong with that. But in my side, I just, you know, want to give the best performance on Saturday and hopefully win the fight.
You've made it clear that fighting in front of your home crowd is really important to you, and it's something that carries weight. So, do you even think about, like, oh, getting a finish in front of my crowd would be extra special? Like, are you even thinking about that? Like, does the taste of victory, is it better when you're fighting in front of your home crowd? And do you, I mean, you've been always been very pragmatic, not that you don't want the finish, but you've always been very win-focused. Are you thinking about the finish here?
I think with the experience you learn that it doesn't matter what you think. The desire don't make the fight. So if you really desire to finish, sometimes that just don't happen. And does it change if you really desire, you're gonna be more likely to finish the fight or to submit the fight. I think the most important is go there with the game plan and finish or knock him out or something like that will be a consequence. Because there was fights that I was really, you know, thinking, oh no, I need to put a great show, like Jake Shields fight, and I start well, and then suddenly all that pressure to put a great show turn against me. So I don't let my mind play these tricks anymore. You know, I know that it doesn't matter what your mind tells you. There is nothing that you can do but go there and fight.
All right, so now the opposite of Damian Maia in terms of on-camera personality or in audio personality or whatever, however you want to say it, is Colby Covington. Colby Covington is, I think, to me, I think he's a genius. I think some people hate him. I love him. You know, I've been seeing his praises from the beginning. It turned out that, you know, I happened to be at his first two UFC fights. The first one was over in Macau. We barely had any English speakers on the card. So, you know, I ended up doing an interview with him. And from the very beginning, you know, I'm always a big fan of true confidence, real confidence, like guys that you can tell that they believe it. You know what I mean? That they're not just hyping themselves up. They're not just saying something to try to get a headline or whatever. I mean, Colby Covington believes he's the best welterweight on the planet. I love the way that he just unabashedly sells fights. I think it fires people up, and I think probably a lot of people hate him. I think probably most people behind the scenes don't realize that he's actually a really nice guy to talk to.
He's super nice.
And I don't want to peel the curtain too far back where you're like, it's just a character, because it's very much Chael Sonnen. I think at this point people realize Chael Sonnen is one way when the camera's on and another way when the camera's off. And that is Colby Covington. And not to say that it's fake, not to say that it's not real. I mean, these are the things he believes. These are the things that how he wants to represent himself. But I don't know. I find it fun because I think a lot of people absolutely fucking hate Colby Covington. And I think he's like the nicest guy. But he gets out there and he's not afraid to just do what he has to do to sell a fight.
I think he's less charismatic in his delivery than Chael was. And that's not his fault, because it's like sometimes you just don't inspire as much, you know, confidence as you would like. I think with him, and we've had this conversation, like, good for him. He does some like really cool stuff, like that tweet with the
fake Gmail account is
the
best.
Dude, that
ever.
Was amazing. That was so well thought out of. Like, he included names of actual retirement homes in Brazil.
That's amazing.
To mock like RDA or something. And I'd never heard of that place, but I Googled it and it was there. Like, that's committing to your gimmick.
Brilliant.
You go. And like you said, he's super nice. Mm-hmm. Very polite. Like, I remember when we arrived at the hotel and he greeted you and he made sure to like stop and introduce himself to me and things like that. These small things, like, mm-hmm. we noticed. But it just, I don't know. He looks very try hard to me. I think it's a taste thing, really. Like, the type of provocation that you respond to well. Like, I'm more of a Bisping girl. Like, I love the way
Bisping's amazing.
I think he's sometimes, well, obviously he says like he uses slurs and whatever and he shouldn't, that's fucked up, but in general, like, I think he's brilliant. Like, the way he does it is brilliant. Like, you see, you have a very smart, sharp guy. And with other guys like Connor, I used to think, now I just think is stale.
I don't enjoy Connor as much anymore either. I think it's just Connor overload. And I'm not taking away from Connor. I mean, the guy is an amazing fighter. What he's done for the sport. I mean, the fact that he got a fight with Mayweather.
Yeah, the fact that he's all like a billionaire or whatever.
It's amazing. You know what I mean? So I don't. But I'm less entertained. I used to like the fun, you know, 60 G's baby and Three People Died making this pocket watch and all that. Man, like, that was the Connor that I love. Now the, you know, the El Chapo gangster stuff. It's like, I don't enjoy it as much. But Covington's, I don't know. It's like, to me, it's almost like cheese. You know what I mean?
It's
like,
cheese. It is. That's cheese, it. You know? That's exactly it.
It's like fake pro wrestling shtick almost.
It's,
you know,
super tacky. It's so over the top. Yeah, in a way, that's refreshing. Like, he's not even trying to like be smooth about it.
Right.
Like, he's not even setting up his like taunts.
No.
He's just talking to you, and then he like throws this massive one-liner that you know he's rehearsed. Like, you know he was talking to himself
when the
viewer saying that.
There's no way.
And you're like, okay, I guess there's something commendable about that. I'll give
you that. I enjoyed it. All right, so let's play a couple minutes of Colby Covington, because he was ready to deliver some one-liners, and he gave you a few.
Colby, I was going to ask how the city's treating you, but I've heard you don't really like it here that much. How are you feeling about Sao Paulo so far?
Yeah, it's a dump. You know, I'm ready to get out of here, man. It's title fights and champagne on U.S. soil after this.
When did you get here?
I haven't left the hotel, to be honest. You know, all these animals around here are looking to kill me. You know, I know they want me dead, screaming Uvai Moore. Could you imagine if people in America were screaming Uvai Moore? That would never happen. Donald Trump would have protests, and that would be an uproar. So, you know, it's just a joke over here. Sao Paulo is a joke, but I'm glad that Dad bought Damian Maia signed the dotted line so I can end his career on Saturday night.
In terms of just fighting in Brazil overall, did you do any type of preparation in particular? Because here, usually you fight a little later than in other places and things like that. People usually switch things around in training. Did you do anything specific about to
prepare for Brazil?
No, not really. You know, it's just the same game plan. I'm a night owl as it is, so, you know, the nighttime is when I come alive, so you're going to see me come alive in the nighttime. I know we're fighting late at night. It's going to be 1:30 a.m. or something like that, so I definitely been staying up later in the hotel, you know, until 3 or 4 a.m. just to make sure my body's acclimated to staying up and being fully aware during that time. So I've been definitely working on that in the hotel here.
And I've read that you've been spending a lot of time at the gym. How much time at the gym?
Too much time. You don't want to know the hours I've been putting in, man. I've been putting in a lot of work, and you're gonna see it come to a head this Saturday when I fight Damian Maia.
How do you manage to do that though, and avoid injuries and stay healthy and just like stay on point? How is that balance during this camp?
You know, you have to know how to train smart. You know, early in my career, I had a lot of injuries. I was coming into fights hurt, and that's why I never saw the best Colby Covington, you know, because you couldn't see my full potential when I was fighting at 50% or 30%. Now I'm 100%. You know, I've learned to train smarter as I've gotten older. I don't train harder. I train smarter. So I'm in the gym a lot longer these days, but I'm training a lot more effective. So, you know, you just have to be smart and have a good balance in your training.
You have a not-so-secret weapon, a guy who already fought Damian Maia, who's a good friend of yours, Jorge Masvidal. How big of a part was he in this camp, and how much did he help you prepare for Damian?
Yeah, George has been a big part in my career and success, you know, since the beginning. You know, he's always given me tips and little advice and stuff that's helped get him to where he is. And, you know, he's helped me out a lot. Just, you know, we know what Damian does. We know where he's strong. And he told me his points where he felt uncomfortable with Damian. So we worked on those areas. And then, you know, we just stay away from those areas. So George Masvidal was a huge help. Thank you. Thanks a lot to him.
And with Damian, it's like, it's pretty straightforward, right? We kind of know what he's gonna do in general. The issue is that when he does get his way, it's really hard to get away from that. How are you preparing for that? And, you know, how prepared are you if it does go to the ground, if he does get the fight where he wants it to be? How confident are you in that area that you can hang with Damian Maia?
I'm better than Damian Maia in everything we do. If we put on the gi today, I'd choke him out in that too. So when we fight on Saturday night, it doesn't matter where the fight goes, I'm going to beat him up everywhere.
You've been saying a lot of things about Damian Maia, and obviously a lot of it is part of the fight promotion, but at the same time, it's funny because it's like the polar opposite, because you're dealing with a guy who's known for being super crazy nice. How is it for you, a guy who really thrives off that kind of like animosity, to promote a fight really on your own? Do you miss having that kind of like back and forth, or really you're comfortable having the monologue?
No, I'm okay. You know, someone's got to sell this fight. No one's selling the fight on this card. You know, we're the real main event. You know, Machida and Brunson, you know, they're not selling the fight. So, you know, I'm making sure fans are engaged and they're drawing emotion. They want to see the fight, you know. So this is the Colby Covington show now. Everybody wants to show up. They want to see me get beat. So good luck. You better get your popcorn ready, because I ain't getting beat for a long time.
You did, it's interesting that you know provocations. You did use very Brazil-specific things that really hurt the Brazilian people, like the 7-1 and things like that. Do you have any insiders or people in camp telling you like how to get under the Brazilian skin? How are you studying to do that?
Yeah, I have some good friends that helped me out. You know, shout out to Mike, Matt, and Chris. You know, I got a good PR team behind me. I got some guys helping me out, you know, so I want to get under their skin. I want them to be extra angry on fight night.
You did say before, I think your exact words, I respect Damian Maia, that's why I want him to finish early, to finish the fight early. Do you, is that the plan, getting out there like with a quick finish? Do you have it in your mind how it's going to play out?
Yeah, definitely. I've literally seen it in my dreams. I've seen it play out multiple times, and he's not going to make it past that second round. You know, I know we're in Brazil, so I'm not going to get any favors from the judges on Saturday night, so it's not going to go to the judges. So he's going to come out, he's going to blow his wad, try and take me down, and then I'm going to finish him. I'm going to be like a shark, and I'm going to come and get my blood.
And one thing you have made no secret of is, if I beat Damian Maia, I'm going to straight to the title shot to the champ, Tyron Woodley. But Dana White has already said that maybe the number one contender fight is actually Rafael dos Anjos and Waller. If it's not Tyron Woodley for you next, do you already have another target on the embarrassment tour, or no, Tyron Woodley is?
I'm just focused on Damian Maia on Saturday night, but Tyron Woodley knows he's next. You know, Dana White did say RDA and Lawler was the next fight, but you know that's never set in stone. You know, after I steal the show on Saturday night, I think I'm going to scare Tyron Woodley into preemptive surgeries and let's just say I hope he's enjoying his time off for his hurt vagina, because when he comes back, his time's up.
Do you think it's important to like really make it a statement win so you can make sure that you snap that ticket?
Absolutely. It's very important to beat Damian Maia a lot worse than Tyrone Woodley did. That was a boring fight. Woodley wasn't decisive. He didn't show that he was a real champion. So I'm going to show Saturday night that I'm bringing excitement back to the welterweight division, and I will be king.
But then there's the added factor, right? That is, it's kind of confusing to really know what's next in the title picture. Right now in both divisions, because you have Bisping fighting Just Be There, and Woodley has been angling for that fight to, you know, amongst those three. And it's really hard to plan your next steps as far as the belt goes. If it takes maybe being inactive and waiting for the belt after this, would you consider doing it? Or is being active a concern of yours? Like, how do you, you know, when it's all said and done, how do you really make a career plan when things are just so confusing all the time?
You know, you stay active. I'm not going to sit on the sidelines. You know, I'm not that fighter that's just going to wait out like a diva. You know, I'll go get an interim belt, and then I'll bitch slap Woodley with the interim belt.
Colby Covington. One of kind. This will be a big win for him. I don't think he's going to retire Damian Maia, but I will say this. He may not have a title shot, but he would be, I think, in a number one contender fight. You'd have to give him somebody that would allow him to get a title shot if he's able to beat Damian Maia, especially if it's impressive. Maybe if he ekes out a decision and you're right that it does tend to be one of these terrible fights, then maybe you don't give it to him. But if he wins it with a submission or an impressive decision, you got to put him in a number one contender fight.
I do agree. And he said he wants to stay active. So it's like... He's going to the preemptive injuries by Woodley are going to start.
That was pretty good trash talk. That was pretty good trash
talk.
Good. Pedro Munhoz versus Rob Font. Good fight in the bantamweight division. Yeah. Kind of weird. You know, we were talking about it. Like, Pedro Munhoz, you know, they have the same career record, right? I mean, but it seems like Pedro Munhoz was always this guy that everybody said, oh, that guy's somebody special. Yeah. And Rob Font has been kind of flying under the radar a little bit. So I feel like this is a good chance for maybe Rob Font to come in and steal a little bit of that Pedro Munhoz shine. I think people... I don't say they've cooled on Pedro Munhoz, but, you know, it was like, okay, he's still got an upside, but maybe he's not quite the finished product that we thought he was. Meanwhile, like I said, Rob Font kind of flying under the radar. I feel like this is a kind of a crossroads for two prospects.
Totally. And the grappling match that you were expecting to see, I think this could be it.
That would be fun. Yeah, you got Rob Font coming out telling us, hey, maybe I'll just go into Brazil, submit this Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, and get my own black belt.
He does want a second round knockout, though. He changes his mind a lot throughout the same interview, I noticed. But he's kind of all over the place guy. But I like how both of them are super respectful toward each other.
Yep.
Like, Pedro, like, defended Rob to me. Mm-hmm. In my attack, I said that Rob Font was nowhere near the rankings, and he's actually number 13.
Well, okay, and these are both on YouTube. You were able to talk to both of them, so if you want to check those out, you're on YouTube. You were worried about it, and I left it in. You're right. I didn't know that they were in the UFC rankings. Pedro Munhoz is number 12. Rob Font is number 13.
Rob is 13, so that makes sense.
But in the real rankings,
so
the MMA junkie rankings, he's not in.
Yeah, the real one. But and then like you could see that like Pedro Munhoz was kind of pissed at me. Like he defended Rob.
He did. He
was like, he's a lovely man, okay, Fernando. I'll tell you that. He's an amazing opponent. Don't you sleep on Rob Font in this fight. I'm actually picking him.
He could beat me. So
he
funny.
Could be. If there's anybody could beat me here, it's Rob. I could do way worse than Rob Font. Okay.
I think it could be a fun
that
fight.
Was
that's
his
for
tone.
Sure.
But it could take place on the feet, too.
I think it's going to be a fun fight.
I'm interested.
Pedro Munhoz is a well-rounded fighter. You think of him as a grappler, but he can definitely strike as well.
Oh,
so.
For sure. And the same way, and Rob, it's like, he has submissions, too. Like, he's not stupid. And he's a finisher.
It's
like,
going to be a fun
fight.
He
goes for the throat. So I think this could be a cool one.
Francisco Trinaldo versus Jim Miller, another fight that I think is sneaky good as well.
Yeah.
Jim Miller setting the record for all-time UFC fights. I mean, that's crazy to think how long he's been doing this. And he had a good interview with you as well today as well where he said, you know, listen, it's a cool mark, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's not like one to be proud of. Like, I wanted a title, and I still want a title.
Yeah.
You know, he said that's still the goal. You know, this is nice to have my name in the history books, but as he said, Bisping is going to, you know, catch up to him again. And, but still, a nice little piece of history. And I like this fight to me. This was another one that I mean, hell, I've been struggling on a lot of these in terms of picks. But this is a fight to me that's really Francisco Trinaldo, man. Of course, you're very familiar with him. Fights fans in the United States might not have seen a lot of him, but as tough as they come, big and strong and scary. Can fade late, but has shown that he seems to be improving. Yeah. And, of course, Jim Miller, that dude could fight 30 rounds. He ain't going to go away.
He finds wins.
Mm-hmm.
I think the main thing with Masvidal Ndombele is that we've learned to see him as this kind of, like, very unrefined fighter, right?
Yeah.
Like,
raw. Kind of raw. Yeah.
Even, like, in the parts where he's good, like, the transitions aren't smooth.
Right.
You kind of see a guy who, like, forces his way into situations a little bit. But he's such a hard worker.
Mm-hmm.
He's nuts about training. He's obsessed. Like, people have to be, like, slow down. Like, they have to take him away from, like, training, because otherwise he would just train, like, day and night all the time. So this is a person who improves. Like, this is the type of person who's going to improve. He doesn't get injured. Like, he's always there. He's always fighting. He's, like, reliable.
Mm-hmm.
I think we could have some, like, battered, bloodied up faces.
This is gonna be a war. There's no question. It's gonna be a war. Jim Miller never goes away.
Yeah.
Trinaldo, he's the folk hero down here. You know, he's a great guy. I mean, he literally came from nothing, and you know, one of those types of stories. Pretty amazing. I think this is gonna be a fun fight.
Yeah.
Thiago Mejia Santos versus Jack Hermansson.
That could be really cool.
That could be a great fight as well. You got the power of Thiago Santos. That dude can knock out anybody. Hermansson on a nice little run. He's putting things together. If he gets on top of you, you don't want to be in that position. Was very open and honest
to
you.
Well, if you're into that kind of thing.
Well, you might be. We went there. He was very open and honest.
We're sober, guys.
That's crazy.
No frosty beverages for us. We're just stupid like that.
That's ridiculous. He was very open and honest with you. He said, listen, I feel like what's really the difference is I'm starting to get the mental game down.
Oh,
you know,
I was
the nerves
impressed.
And stuff, and now I'm starting to handle it.
So rare for a fighter to, like, I have mental issues. Not well, he did. Okay,
let's be honest. That's not rare at all.
Okay, so let's.
These people fight in a steel cage for a living.
Let me rephrase it. It's very rare for a guy to be like, my main problem is mental. And then when I ask him, how are you overcoming that? And it's like, it's still a process, like, that he deals with anxiety, that he. All fighters probably do to
Absolutely.
A point. But that you're willing to be so honest and so open about it, I thought that was commendable. And he's huge, man. I'd seen him in person, apparently, though I forgot. Sorry, Jack. He's big. And I joked about that with Thiago, because he's my boy.
Yeah.
And I went by him and I was like, the kid's big, huh? And he's like, right? Like, right? Like, he wasn't expecting it, I guess.
Didn't have that in the scouting report. Yeah, that's another fight. And then the final fight on the six-fight main card, John Lineker versus Marlon Chito Vera.
That is an amazing fight.
Another great fight. Lineker, of course, the power that he brings, I mean, it's unbelievable. The way he works the body, it's just, I mean, the dude is a little thug, man. It's crazy the power
that
he has in his hands.
It's crazy.
Meanwhile, Chito Vera, a young kid, but is on a little bit of a roll of his own, is gaining confidence and is quickly becoming one of my favorite interviews.
He needs to, like, update the tattoos on his UFC.com.
Does he got some new tattoos? Yeah, check out UFC.com. Does he have some new ones since then?
He has, like, a bunch of new ones. He's, like, covered up, and he just got a neck one.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, doesn't he have the neck one? And he's got some good. Yeah, this is an old
one. Guys, I digress. I'm just like, we're looking at the pictures. I'm like, hey, they have to update this.
Let them know.
Fun
card. I think you and I were both shocked. We know we talked about the fact that the odds are really close on a lot of these fights. You look at it, they're damn near pick 'ems all the way through. This one is not even remotely close. This is the biggest spread on the card, right? I mean, Lineker is a massive favorite. And I guess in some ways I get that. Lineker is the more proven product. He's definitely the more name-recognizable product, which I think that still goes a long way in MMA lines because, you know, there's just fighters that people haven't heard of, and I think Marlon might be one of those guys. But I think this is a better fight than the odds might suggest.
I think with Chito, it's like people really, and we were talking about this, might think of him still as that fighter from way back, you know. But he changed at this age. He's 24. It's the time when he's gonna evolve so greatly, right? So if you're expecting that guy, a guy from 2 years ago, you're not gonna get the same guy.
So true.
And he trained in Ecuador,
mm-hmm.
like, and he said it himself. Like, I've always been a brawler. He got in trouble on the street. Like, he was that kind of kid. Like, he was a troublemaker. So he had that in him, and he always did, and that's, like, a good first step. But he wasn't a refined product. And he's moved to the U.S. He's been at a team, and Team Oyama has been doing a good job with these kids. of just like really helping them evolve what they already have. And I think it shows. So I think people might still be thinking of him as that guy. And because we've interviewed him, and obviously he's an amazing interview and good guy, we might be looking at him more closely than a lot of people are.
I would agree.
So, you know, a lot of people might be like, who did he fight? Like, not even know he's on a 3-fight streak,
right?
You know, so I think that could be it.
It's a good main card. The prelims wrap up with Vicente Luque versus Nico Price. Nico Price is quickly becoming one of my guys, too.
Oh, yeah.
Just the right amount of crazy, just the right amount of confidence. I mean, in my head, I was thinking about, man, if him and Mike Perry ever fight, like the type of buildup that we're going to have, the trash talking between these two. It's Nico's not a trash talker.
Yeah,
he's respectful.
He doesn't talk trash.
But it's just a little bit of crazy. Just a little bit of crazy in there. You know, the back and forth conversation, I think, because Mike's going to talk trash. You know what I mean? And then Nico's just going to kind of blow it off and have his own funny responses to it. But on top of that, he's a fun fighter, and it looks like I think that could be a fun fight too. So the prelims, I mean, it's all the way through, I think it's going to be good. Shoe Face is on here versus Jack Marshman.
Another, I think now he's probably the biggest favorite.
That's right, another big favorite as well. Understandable there.
Ugh, horrible matchup for Marshman. Like,
it's a tough fight for him.
But again, the man had like served in Afghanistan, like.
Nerves ain't
it's just a dude.
All right, I think this is going to be a fun card. Looking to next year, have you heard anything? Run Loose 2018 sounds like probably the 3-fight-a-year model is kind of what Brazil can expect.
Yeah.
Rio, Sao Paulo, and then one kind of rotating city.
I've heard Brasilia.
Mm.
But here's how I heard of it. A friend of I'm from Brasilia. A friend of my dad's was casually talking to me. He works in production, and he casually mentioned that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's kind of funny when your non-MMA life comes together.
And I'm like, can I write this? Are you giving me a scoop, man? But yeah, so I think that could be obviously, they scout a lot of places and a lot of people, and they stay in touch with a lot of the companies that they have already used. So no, nothing's like set in stone yet, but I think that could be a good possibility. It's a good market for them.
It is. Sure. Sounds like I think maybe – I don't know that the Brazilian deal – ends the same time as the U.S. Fox deal does. I think it does, to be honest with you. I think they tried to time those together so that they're TV deals. But I think this is the last year of the deal. And I think a pay-per-view is guaranteed down here as well. So I think we'll end up with one pay-per-view down here again, which I would imagine
probably
in Rio at HSBC again. It is kind of weird. It seems like Rio ends up getting the better cards, even though Sao Paulo is a huge city as well and a big you know, key market. But it doesn't ever seem like we've gotten the big cards in Sao Paulo. They've always been in Rio.
True. I mean, we got Vitor here a few times and stuff like that, but I do agree with you that Rio is like, when it's like really prime stuff, like Curitiba got that really good one, 198, and then most of it has been.
I'd love to do another show in Curitiba, man. That stadium setup
that was so cool.
Was perfect. All right, 1 month from now, Anderson Silva is going to be fighting in China against Kelvin Gastelum. Everybody still care here? Is it still, I mean, Anderson's getting up there, and this is against a talented fighter, but not another MMA legend or something like that. So you think people in Brazil are going to be watching this card in China? I haven't done the time. It's going to be local time in China, so I don't know
what time
that's going to be here.
Oh, that's like the opposite.
It'll be like the middle of the morning, right?
Yeah,
or like,
probably.
You know, so I don't know. Are people going to be watching? Are people talking about Anderson Silva?
I don't think so. I mean, they will, but like not this. Like when he came back, like the fight with Diaz when he came back from the injury.
Yep.
Dude, that was like – that was huge. Mm-hmm. I saw it at a bar. I'd never seen, like, I've seen plenty of fights in bars, and, like, I've never seen every single head turn to the television, and that was the one time I got to see that. The other time was when he fought Chris Weidman.
Right.
For the first time. So, his pool is a lot bigger than everybody else, and that's for sure.
So, he's still the biggest star?
I would say so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, you have rising people, like, Cyborg is pretty big. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say it's the same thing, but I would say she's up there. Yeah. I think people don't notice, but she's up there. And but I don't think this, like, after Brunson already, like, it started fading a bit. And I think this one, I don't think people are just really going to stop what they're doing and watch it.
Hmm. Shame to hear. Well, we're going out there. I'll be in Shanghai. I'll be pulling a solo shift on that one, unfortunately, since it is a little bit expensive to go to Sydney and Shanghai in back-to-back weeks. And it's at the end of the year, too, so it sucks. You know, the company's trying to save a few bucks at the end of the fiscal year. If it was in January, I could probably get cold coffee over there with me. So hopefully I'd do an okay job doing that. Last thing I have for you, I did want to ask. Weight cutting has been a really, really big conversation as of late in all of MMA, and it seems like the continuation continues to go. George St. Pierre, Mike Bond was at a media day with him in Montreal. He kind of came out and said he doesn't like the early weigh-in situation and, you know, basically just criticizing weight cutting. The reason I want to ask you is because the thing that everybody worries about is death, and it happened here. It happened in 2013, December, at a Chuteau Brazil event. A fighter died due to a weight cut, and we could do a whole hour sitting down trying to figure out what the right solution is for weight cutting. But I just wonder, I mean, did that register here? Did it register on the national sports landscape at all? And did people down here start to have those conversations? Like, what the hell? Because it seems like it's becoming a topic now, which is good, I guess. It's, you know, the big weight cut with Kevin Lee. And I mean, everybody's talking about it. What can we do? But I just wondered, like, at that time, did it make waves?
It did, but, like, as death in MMA. Mm-hmm. Like, people didn't really – because the people who saw it didn't really understand, I guess, what goes into a weight cut. And mm-hmm. then, of course, for days, that's all people talked – like, every news show talking about it. Like, they were trying to explain what the weight cut was and how dangerous it was. But I think it registered more as – it's that death in MMA that people remember, you know?
Yeah.
Like, when I bring it up with someone, like, random, they're going to be like, oh, didn't that guy die? That one? Because I always say, like...
Like, in that sport or whatever?
Yeah.
It's not even from competition
itself.
Because
I always say, like, nobody died. Like, I've never covered a death in my life, you know? Like, so it's not as bad as you think. Oh, but how about that guy who died in that fight? I'm like, he didn't die in the fight. He died during the weight cut, which is a whole other conversation. That's like, I'm not going to have it with you right now. I'll send you some links. Read up, and we can have a healthy argument about it. But yeah, I mean, of course, I think it's gotten to a point where it's like where we can't just pretend it's not happening anymore. We did for a really long time. You know, we've seen how they look and how they get and just how, you know, and you have guys, I think it was even Jim Miller saying that his concern was the lack of IV because he thinks that getting punched in the face while dehydrated is the concern.
Definitely.
So you're talking, we've come to a stage where the weight cut is like, this is an annoying part of it, but okay. And I think a lot more fighters are starting to really think about how the weight cutting part might affect the rest of their lives.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it's tough to have long-term thought process. You know, you're thinking about the short term and right now what's going to get you the most results and how you're going to get the most money and the most fame and the most opportunities and all that. But, yeah, it's so weird because I don't think there's an easy solution. And you know,
is it like more divisions?
Which,
is it same-day wins? Like,
I know.
All of it. It's just hard. It's like it's a hard thing to actually, like, fix.
I just hope that whatever we end up doing, I think what you said is right. The key takeaway right now that everybody needs to know is that, like, we just can't have our heads in the sand about it anymore and pretend like, you know, I think continued discussion and continued research needs to happen. Because the other thing too is, again, it seems like people offer solutions and there's no data behind it. It's just like, well, we need to do more weight classes. And you know, the key argument against that is, well, if you have more weight classes, you might end up screwing yourself worse because people that are, you know, they might try to cut down a little bit more than you end up creating. So, I mean, there's pros and cons both ways, but I wish, you know, whatever we do, I hope that it comes with some science behind it too, because I feel like too much of this is almost like an emotional thing.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, I'll be honest, you know, obviously Dana White is tied to certain things and certain things. I'm kind of frustrated how dismissive he is of even the idea. Like, and that's always been his position, so it's not like it's changed. I mean, from time eternal, he's always said, I like the weight classes we have. We're keeping them in the story. But you would hope that he'd at least, like...
But Novitski is open.
Novitski said he's open to it,
yeah.
But Dana is like, no, we're not open to it. And I would love to hear... But, you know, hey, Dana was against women's MMA. Dana was against the women's flyweight division. Yeah. Dana, you know, Dana's been
We've
against a lot of
that
things.
He can, like, change his
he can
mind
definitely
about
change
things.
His mind. So hopefully that'll be the case. Like I said, I would like to see research and data versus just people throwing an idea out there and just, you know, with no real factual information. I'd be like, this will fix it, you know? But as you said, I just think we can't ignore it anymore. So, all right, well, listen, you mentioned the fact that we don't have any frosty beverages here, and that needs to change. The way the work set
that.
Up, yeah, the way the work set up played out today, this is the way we had to do things. So it was a frosty beverageless MMA roadshow. That's not a good thing to have. So it's time to get out of this hotel and go enjoy a couple of those. So thank you very much for taking your time and looking forward to a good fight card, I think, on Saturday night. So I think everybody should tune in. I forgot to say all the stuff about iTunes and leaving feedback and all that and good stuff and harassing Nanda Pratchis online. So
don't harass me online.
She loves it. She was just telling me last night she really loves stalking and harassment online.
Let's just not harass me. Let's just say nice things.
There you go.
You can go to my Twitter and be nice to me, and I would love
spread
it.
Spread the positivity.
I appreciate
her insight.
I'll thank you in gifts.
And her work as the interviewer for MMA Junkie this week, because I was just the cameraman, and I'll tell you what, is I suck at being a cameraman, but it's kind of nice not to have to do research and not to have questions
together.
You've
been having a pretty breezy week while I've been stressing out.
It's kind of like, hey, sorry you're stressed out.
Low-key called out by Pedro Munoz.
That's me every other week. So. In the meantime, thanks for listening.